Bhadram karne vishnu yama devaha Bhadram pashye maksha bhirya chatraha Sthirairangaihi stushtu vagam sastanubihi Yashema devahitai yadayuhu Swasti na hindro vriddhashravaha Swasti nav pusha vishvavedaha Swasti nas tharkshyo harishtanemihi Swasti no brahaspatir dadhatu Om shanti 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 Good. Welcome back. We will continue now to the final section of our text. Where are we? So the text opened up with the division of Om into the four mantras, Ahuma, and the silence. And then the text proceeded to unfold the waking, dream, and sleep states, Jagrat, Swapna, Avastha states, connecting them to Ahuma. And then for the last, I think, two, three classes, we saw the pinnacle of this text, the seventh mantra, dealing with that fourth mantra, a very profound section of the text, perhaps one of the most profound texts in all of Vedanta. So having concluded that, we're ready to move on to the final portion of the text. The final portion of the text is actually meditation instruction. It's instruction for Omkara Upasana. So this Om, it's not, this text is not meant literally meant only for study. It's meant for practice as well. And some details of that practice are sketched out in the final sequence of verses, which gives us Omkara Upasana, meditation on the syllable Om. So we'll pick up the thread. Verse 8 introduces the meditation. Let's see that. Repeat after me. Soyamatma, soyamatma, adhyaksharam, adhyaksharam, omkaro, omkaro, adimatram, padamatra, padama, matrascha pada, matrascha pada, akara ukaro makara hiti, akara ukaro makara hiti, saha ayam omkaraha. The whole text has been an unfoldment of om, omkara, the syllable om, the sound om. Saha ayam omkaraha, and about this very syllable om, soyam atma. This syllable om represents atma. And atma in four contexts. We said that Vaishvanara is atma present in the waking state. We said that Taijasa is atma present in the dream state. Prajna is atma present in deep sleep. And we have no words for it, only words of negation that describe atma free from any encumbrances, free from any upadhis, any conditioning adjuncts, in the which is not in any particular state. We had this discussion long ago that fourth is not a state. There is a state of waking, a waking state, a dream state, a sleep state. There is no fourth state. We saw that very clearly in the last class. We said that the fourth is the one because of which the other three exist. It's not a fourth state. And one of the unfortunate problems of modern Vedanta, often called Neo-Vedanta, is many teachers who haven't understood this properly will commonly call Turiya a fourth state. It is a fourth, but it is not a state of experience in the way that the waking, dream, and sleep states are. Turiya, as we understood in our prior class, is Shuddha Chaitanya, pure consciousness, the pure consciousness because of which any experience can exist, the pure consciousness because of which the other three states exist. So please don't fall into that trap, as it were, of thinking that there is a fourth state of experience. Oh, that was interesting. I happened to see in my notes, I mentioned having studied this with Pujaswami Dayananda in the 1980s, and I still have my notes. When I was going over the notes, I put in the margins when I ask him questions in satsang. So I asked him a question in satsang, Swamiji, to which state of experience does samadhi belong? To which state of experience does samadhi belong? Really speaking, it must belong to the waking state, right? Unless you fall asleep. If you fall asleep, it's not samadhi. It obviously cannot be the deep sleep state, because samadhi is a state of absorption. It can't be the dream state because you're not asleep. It has to be waking state. Samadhi is a waking state experience. It's not a fourth state of experience. In samadhi, there Patanjali identifies six different kinds of samadhi. I don't want to go into all the details. But one way of understanding the samadhi is one unchanging vritti. Is one way to understand samadhi. So in order for there to be a vritti, it can't be deep sleep. And if you're awake, if you're not sleeping, if you're really awake, then it can't be the dream state. So any form of samadhi cannot be a fourth state of experience. All forms of samadhi take place in the waking state. Again, fourth is not a state. The turiya avastha, if we use that expression avastha, we use it figuratively. Avastha means state. But if we use the expression turiya avastha, if we use the term state figuratively, so we mean that fourth one, the unconditioned consciousness because of which the other three conditioned states of experience exist. Okay. Saha ayam atma. This is the atma we're talking about. And that atma is Omkaraha. That atma is represented by Om. That atma from four perspectives, as I said, from the waking perspective, dream perspective, sleep perspective, and unconditioned perspective. That atma is represented by Omkara. That atma is Omkara Adhyaksharam. With reference to adhyaksharam, with reference to akshara, syllable, with reference to syllables, that atma is om. Om is a syllable. So from the standpoint of, this is a little grammatical, but it's not too complex. With reference to syllables, atma is represented by om, but adhimatram, with reference to matras. What are the matras? Ah, ma, and the unnameable one. So those are the matras. So with reference to syllables, atma is represented by om. Adhimatram, but with reference to matras, ah, ma, and the unnameable ones, then pada matra. The pada, the four quarters of Atma, really speaking, waking, dream, sleep, and the unconditioned one. Those are the padas. Those four are represented by the matras, by the portions of Om, A, U, Ma, and the unnameable one. Matraha cha pada, just turning it around backwards, and the matras, A, U, Ma, and the unnameable one, are connected to the four quarters of Atma, waking, dream, sleep, and the unconditioned state. This is as we saw in the introduction, so the connection between A and the waking state, U and the dream state, Ma, sleep state, etc. And what are those matras? Akaraha, Ukaraha, Makaraha, Iti. The matras are the three, A, U, and Ma. This verse is on introducing our Omkara Upasana. There are four verses, exactly four verses left in the text. Not surprisingly, the first verse deals with A, the next, U, the third, Ma, and the fourth, the unnameable mantra. Before we see those, I want to show you the pattern. There's a pattern that's going to repeat in the first three. I'm not sure if it extends into the fourth. No. There's a pattern in the first three of the verses. And if you see the pattern, then the verses will just be a little easier to follow. So each of those three verses first is going to introduce which matra, and that matra is connected to which pada. So A is connected to Vaishwanara, U connected to Taijasa, etc. So it's going to show that. And then the second part, read my notes here. The second part is going to give an analogy. What is the connection? Why does A represent the waking state? Why does U represent the dream state? And it's going to create an analogy based on the letters. So the letter A, U, Ma, based on those letters, it's going to create an analogy. You'll see what I mean when we get to the text. And then in the final part of each, the final part of each is a little, very typical for Upanishads, but not typical elsewhere, is stuti. Stuti means praise. And you'll find some rather odd expressions of praise. And this is the style of the Upanishad. Upanishads are Vedas. Vedas are very ancient texts. And they had a certain style. So the style is, after giving a very profound teaching, the style is, if you follow this teaching, this is what you'll get. A little bit like a more modern example is, many of you are familiar with at the end of many stotrams, there's a palashruti. There's a verse or two or three that describes, if you recite this stotra every day, you're going to get money and children and this and that and the other thing. And that's called a palashruti. It occurs at the end of many, many stotras. And we're kind of mature enough not to take them so literally, right? In fact, if I were to chant that stotra, and a stotra is promising me I'm going to have many children, that's rather a problem. So the purpose of the palashruti or the stuti or praise is not something to be taken very literally, but it's part of the poetic style of praising something very profound that has just been taught. And we'll see that. You'll find also that these stutis are also connected to the letters. It's all very poetically connected. We'll see that as we proceed. So we'll see the same pattern, this threefold pattern will occur in the 9th, 10th, and 11th mantras in the Upanishad. We'll proceed to the 9th, which will begin with the Ahkara. Jagaritasthano, Jagaritasthano, Vaishwanaro, Vaishwana, Akaraha Pratama Matra, Akaraha Pratama Matra, Apterhaditwat, Apterhaditwat, Va apnoti Havai, Va apnoti Havai, Sarvan Kaman, Sarvan Kam, Adishcha Bhavati, Adishcha Bhavati, Yahevam Veda, Yahevam Veda. Okay, I'm breaking up the words so that we get the meaning a little bit more clearly. So it begins, Jagritasthanaha Vaishwanaraha. Vaishwanara is Atma in the waking state. It is Atma, but with the upadhi of the waking state. The upadhi of the waking state is body, mind, senses, everything. That's why remember Vaishwanara, Vishwa, Vishwanara. In fact, another word for Vaishwanara is Vishwa, often referred to in commentaries. So that Vaishwanara, that Atma in the waking state, Jagritasthanaha, means in the waking state, connected to that Vaishwanara is Akaraha. So the letter A, the mantra A, is connected as the Pratama Matra, the first letter. So the first letter of Om, Pratama Matra, the first letter of Om, which is Akaraha, is connected to Vaishwanara, which is, or represents Vaishwanara, which is Atma in Jagritasthanaha, in the waking state. So this is building our meditation. So in meditation, it is intended that as you're chanting Om, you're appreciating that the A represents Atma in the waking state. And we'll see all of that in more detail when we get to the actual, when we just a sneak preview in our next class, which will be the last class for this text. Not our last class, but the last class for this text. I'm hoping we'll have plenty of time. We'll perform Omkara Upasana together. I'll introduce it properly and we'll perform that together. So I'm not going to talk too much about the meditation today, but focus more on the verses today. So this is part one. We've connected Ahkara to Vaishwanara, to Atma in the waking state. Now the second part is the analogy. Why does A necessarily connect to Vaishwanara? The text gives two reasons. It says, Abdehe adimatvat va. These are va, one or the other. What are the two reasons? Abdehe and the second, adimatvat. We'll take the second one first. Adimatvat. Adi means first. Adimat, that which possesses the status of coming first. Adimatvat, because Ahkara comes first. What comes first in the alphabet? In fact, just like the English alphabet is A to Z, the Greek alphabet Alpha to Omega, Sanskrit alphabet is A to Ha. A to Ha. This is a Sanskrit. In fact, Panini in his sutras, he calls the letters Aha. That's his code word for the whole alphabet, is Aha. Okay, so because A is a letter that comes first in the alphabet, wouldn't it make sense then to represent the pada, the aspect of Atma, which we treated first? Vaishwanara came first in our analysis. Vaishwanara comes first in our ordinary analysis of experience. if we're going to analyze our experience, what experience would you analyze first? Deep sleep? Dream? This one, waking state. It is obvious that you start with where you are. So Vaishvanara is obviously the first one. Comes first in the text, comes first just logically, reasonably. So since Vaishvanara comes first, then naturally we should represent it by a, the letter that comes first in the alphabet. There's another reason he give, the Rishi gives, also Aptehe. Literally it means because of Apti. Apti means pervasiveness, pervasion. And here, I'll give you some of Shankara's explanation here. Because you're wondering, in what sense does a pervade? Aptehi means because of pervasion. Shankara explains, aptihi vyaptihi. It means in the sense of being pervasive. So how does a pervade? He says, akarena. Akarena sarva vak vyapta. By the letter A, the entire language is pervaded. How is that so? By the letter A, the entire language is pervaded. Tell me, this is very good for our Sanskrit students. Suppose you want to pronounce this letter, the first consonant. How do you pronounce that? Just a consonant. There's no vowel indicated. So if you want to pronounce it, you have to add an a, giving you the syllable ka. So for ka ka ga ga nga, a pervades. For cha cha ja ja nya, a pervades, and so forth, all the way through the alphabet. A pervades in the sense that it's an auxiliary used to pronounce each of the sounds. So, just as he's giving this is the analogous reason for why a is connected to the waking state. And the waking state pervades all your experiences, I suppose. All experience. All waking experience is in the, how shall we say that? All waking experience takes place in Jagrat Avastha. Vaishvanara pervades all waking experience. So since Vaishvanara pervades all waking experiences, that's why a letter which pervades all language. In that way, A is the appropriate letter to represent Vaishvanara. This is the second reason given in the analogies. And then comes the stuti. Oh, I should, before seeing the stuti, these analogies, it's okay if they're a little arbitrary. That's not the point is not that there's some rigid connection. This is symbolism. Pure and simple. Symbolism. Symbols are pretty arbitrary, right? I mean, the American flag doesn't have to look the way it does. When I'm teaching, just a quick aside, a very nice metaphor for symbolism, and I use this a lot when I teach children, a good analogy is a flag. You know, and I ask the children, suppose you have a piece of cloth with a band of orange at the top, a band of white in the middle, a band of green at the bottom, and this big circle thing in the middle. And I ask the children, that's just a piece of cloth, right? And the children say, no. That's India's national flag. Wonderful. Excellent. This is symbolism. It is really just a piece of cloth. But we superimpose meaning upon that piece of cloth. Now, suppose it didn't happen to be quite like that. Suppose there were different colors, or the bands were in a different order. White was at the top, and then came orange, and then came green. Suppose. If it had always been that way, then it would be fine, right? So the point I'm making is symbols are arbitrary, and as long as we give them proper meaning, and I've read someplace there is some kind of meaning and order to the orange, white, and green. We won't worry about all that, but there is ways of interpreting it. So symbols are arbitrary, but we interpret them with specific meanings. So here we could say that looking at as being all-pervasive, looking at as being first and therefore connecting well to Vaishvanara, to some extent you can say it's arbitrary, it's okay. This is a symbolism that the Rishi gives us. This is a symbolism that the Rishi wants us to follow. Just like somebody gave you India's national flag, we just accept it as it is, and then we can learn the symbolism of why. Certainly the symbolism of the chakra is very clear. In the same way, here the Rishi gives us the symbolism of being connected to Vaishvanara. All right. Then, having given a symbolism, we then get this stuti. And this stuti, like that palashruti I mentioned before, is very stylistic. And that is, it's a device, a poetic device that's often included, as I mentioned before. After a very profound teaching, then you offer several lines of praise or just words of praise. Here the words of praise are apnoti havai sarvan kaman adisha bhavati ya evam veda. Start with that last phrase. Yaha evam veda. Yaha, one who, evam, thus, Veda, knows. One who thus knows, one who understands this. Understands what? The symbolism and connection between Ahkara and Vaishvanara, which is what this verse described. So one who understands the symbolism conveyed by this verse, Ya Evam Veda, what happens for that person? Apnoti havai. Indeed, apnoti, that person gains things. Notice the word apnoti, apdehi. Oh, actually not connected to apdehi. Apnoti is another word with a. This is a poetic style. Another word with a. And it's just because it's poetic to do so. So the person apnoti gains. What does a person gain? Sarvan kaman, all desires. The person fulfills all desires. Just by understanding is connected to Jagrat Avastha, stuti. Not meant to be taken literally, a very stylistic kind of praise. So, understand, Ya Evam Veda, one who understands the symbolism of this verse, apnoti havai sarvan kaman. That person gains or fulfills all desires. Adihicha bhavati, and the person becomes adihi. Another word, being very poetic. Adi here means foremost. The person becomes foremost. The person who understands the symbolism of this verse becomes fulfills all desires and becomes foremost. So this is stuti. It's not meant to be taken literally, but it's a praise. You'll only find stuti like this after something that's quite important. Oftentimes you find a stuti at the end, well, the palashruti, you find at the end of the stotra. Imagine a stotra, and some of you are familiar with this, so let me just elaborate a little bit. Imagine a stotra where after every verse you had this palashruti. Wouldn't that be odd to have that after every verse? Well, here, we're going to find for the next three verses, we have it at the end of each verse, or at the end of each mantra, which means that the subject matter for the stotra, the whole stotra is being praised at the very end. These three verses are so important that the stuti comes after each one of the three verses. That gives you a sense of the importance of them. So, verse 9 treats akara. Verse 10, or the 10th mantra, I should say, treats ukara. Swapnasthanaha, swapnasthanaha, taijasaha ukaraha, taijasaha ukaraha. Dvitiya matra, dvitiya matra. Utkarshat, utkarshat. Ubhayatvat va, ubhayatvat va. I'm breaking the words all the way through. Twat va. Utkarshati havai, utkarshati havai. Jnana santatim, jnana santatim. Samanascha bhavati, samanascha bhavati. Nasya brahmavit, nasya brahmavit. Kule bhavati, kule. Yahevam veda, evam veda. All right. Swapnasthanaha taijasaha. Taijasa, atma, which is swapnasthanaha. Taijasa is atma with reference to the dream state. Swapnasthana, abiding in a dream state. Taijasa, which is atma, abiding in a dream state. It is represented by ukaraha, the letter U, which is the dvitiya matra, which is the second matra, the second of a, u, ma. So that's our first part, identifying the matra u being connected to the pada taijasa. Then, why? Here comes our analogies. And if the analogies for a, akara began with a, you can guess that the analogies for u are going to be words beginning with u, like utkarsha. Well, there's our next word, utkarshat. Utkarshat, and next u word is ubhayatvat va. These are the two reasons, both beginning with u. Utkarshat, because it's higher, and I'll explain these in just a moment, the two reasons given. Why does U get connected to Taijasa? Utkarshat, because U is higher. Ubhayatvatva, or because it's in the middle. Ubhayatvat. Now, what do these expressions mean? Utkarshat, higher. Higher or later. Utkarsha, higher or later. So, U in the alphabet, does U precede A or follow A? A, A, E, E, U. Follows. So U follows A, just like Taijasa follows Vaishvanara, or better said, Swapna follows Jagrat. So just as sleep follows waking state, in the same way, U follows a in the alphabet. Also, u follows a in the mantra om, and literally follows. We saw this at the very beginning of this text. Remember that the o of om can be grammatically deconstructed into a plus u. There's a sandhi rule in Sanskrit that says a followed by u becomes o. It's a very important grammar rule. A followed by U becomes O. So U is following A, utkarshat. So because U follows A, therefore, just as swapna follows jagrat, that's why U is connected. The second reason given, ubhayatvat. Another explanation beginning with U, there's our poetry coming. And here, ubhayatvat, literally means because of both. Because of both what? Because of both things surrounding u. What are both things surrounding u? Well, u is preceded by a. U is followed by ma. So because u is in between a and ma, just as swapna is in between jagrat and sushupti. So this is the analogy. And again, it's not rigid. We said it could be arbitrary. This is a symbolism being defined for us by the rishi, symbolism that we will then employ in Omkara Upasana. So we have to learn the symbolism first, and then we do the Upasana. So that is the analogy. The reason that U is connected to the to Taijasa is because U follows A, and because U is in between A and Ma, just like Swapna follows Jagrat, and Swapna is in between Jagrat and Sushupti. Now comes more stuti, more praise. And the praise is also going to use words beginning with U. That's the style. Utkarshati havai jnana santatim samanaha cha bhavati na asya abrahmavit kule bhavati. We get three kinds of praise. Ya evam veda. Start there. Yaha evam veda. Yaha, one who, evam, thus, veda, knows, understands. One who understands the symbolism conveyed by this verse. What does that person gain? Utkarshati. There's our U word. Utkarshati. Something grows. Something rises. Something advances. What rises? Havai, indeed. What rises is jnana santatim. The santati, the flow of jnana, the flow of wisdom, advances. For such a person, understanding this verse, jnana santatim utkarshati, the flow of knowledge advances. Samanaha cha bhavati. Samana. Well, that's interesting. That's not a new word. Nor is the next one. So it's a little inconsistent. That's okay. So, samanaha cha bhavati is the second point of praise. The person bhavati becomes samanaha, the same. That's not very... I can't make sense. And what do you mean? The person becomes the same. That's literally what it says. So if you don't understand, you open up commentary. Samanaha. Tulyaha cha. Same means same. You become the same. Same in what sense? Mitrapakshasya eva shatrupakshanam api apradveshyaha. Says just as you are apradveshyaha, just like your friends don't hate you. I hope your friends don't hate you. So Shankara's metaphor here is just like your friends don't hate you, in the same way your enemies don't hate you. Samana in that sense. So everyone is the same, friends and enemies alike, apradveshyaha, are free from anger or hatred towards you. So here, the person becomes loved by everyone. That's a praise. Just to paraphrase it, the person becomes loved by everyone, even by his enemies. More stuti. And a final bit of stuti, praise, is na asya abrahmavit kule bhavati. Asya kule, bring those two words together. In his family, so the person ya evam veda, the one who understands the symbolism of this verse, asya kule, in that person's family, abrahmavit, one who is doesn't know Brahman, one who is not enlightened, an unenlightened one, na bhavati, is not. And I need to paraphrase that a little bit to make it simpler. So one who properly understands the symbolism of this verse, in fact, there's a double negative here. I'm going to remove the double negative. In that person's family, everyone becomes enlightened. Na abrahmavit asya kule bhavati. There's a double negative. In that person's family, there is no one who is unenlightened. No one who is unenlightened, double negative, means everyone becomes enlightened in that person's family. How can they all become enlightened? Well, if you're in that family and you're enlightened, then you're going to make everyone else in that family enlightened. That's the sense. I don't think it really works that way, but... But this is the stuti, the praise given. So three kinds of praise given for understanding the connection between ukara and taijasa. First praise is that person's wisdom advances. Second praise is that person becomes the same for all, meaning that even their enemies love that person. And the final bit of praise is everyone in that person's family becomes enlightened. So this, again, this is to prepare us for meditation. We're learning the symbolism that will then be employed in Omkara Upasana. We come now to the third matra, Makara. Sushupta sthanaha, pragnyo makara, tritiya matra, mithehe apithehe va, breaking the sandhis. Those rephas are actually the sargas. Minoti hava hidam sarvam, apitish cha bhavati, yahevam veda. So, dealing with the third matra, sushupta sthanaha prajnaha. So prajnaha, as you recall, is our name for atma with reference to the deep sleep state, or atma, which is sushupta sthanaha, abiding in the sleep state, sushupti. So atma, abiding in the deep sleep state, sushupti, is represented by makaraha, by the letter ma. The letter ma being the tritiya matra, being the third, can't really say third letter, third part of om. The third part of om, following a and u, is makara tritiya matra. So first we establish the connection between makara and prajnaha. Then we get our analogies. And since the letter is ma, we're going to find analogies beginning with the letter ma. And the two analogies he gives is mitehe and just one. So the first one, mitehe, begins with ma. The second is apitehe. So one begins with ma, the other doesn't. What do these words mean? Mitehe, because of because of measurement, and I'll explain this in just a moment. So what is the analogy that because of which makara is connected to prajna? He says one reason is mitehe, because of measurement, and the other reason is apiti. Apiti means resolution or dissolution, and I'm going to explain both of these words. In fact, we're going to turn to Sri Shankara's commentary to make some sense out of that. First, measuring. What in the world do you mean by measuring? Shankara explains with a nice drishtanta he gives. Mitehe, mitihi, manam, measuring. First he defines the word, measuring, manam. Miyate, eva, as though measuring. What kind of as though measuring? He vishvatajasau prajnena pralaya utpatyoho. Just as, he says, when Vishwa and Taijasa pralaya utpatti, when they dissolve into makara, and when they emerge from makara. He says measuring in that sense. Entering and leaving. That's measuring? That doesn't sound like measuring to us. So, but he says measuring in the sense of just like Vishwa and Taijasa. Vishwa means Vaishwanara. It means the same thing. Vishwa or Vaishwanara. Just like Vishwa and Taijasa enter prajna, and as they come out of prajna, in that sense, measuring. Now, we don't think of measuring in that sense because we don't live in ancient times. If we lived in ancient times, we would have this experience, and then he gives the rest of the drishtanta here. He says, pravesha nirgamabhyam prasthena eva yavaha. Yava is barley. So he says, barley, it's a grain. I don't even know what barley grain is. It's translated barley. He says, just as barley is measured. How is barley measured? There is such a thing as a prasthena. A prasthena is a measuring basket. So if you want to measure some barley, you fill the basket with barley, and then you empty it. By filling the basket repeatedly and emptying it repeatedly, you thereby measure the amount of barley. It goes into the basket, it comes out of the basket. Oho. Vishwa and Taijasa enter Prajna, and they come out of Prajna. Just as barley enters, this is obscure, I admit. But this is why we need a commentary like Shankara's. In measuring in what sense? So he says, just as barley enters a basket and then comes out of the basket, in the same way, Vishwa and Taijasa enter Prajna and come out of Prajna. This is measuring. Now you understand. Remember, the symbolism can be arbitrary as long as we understand it, as long as we all agree. Symbols don't always have to have the same meaning. You know, symbols can even change meanings. I find that fascinating. Symbols can have different meanings to different people at different times. During World War II, this meant victory. During the Vietnam War, this meant not victory. This meant peace. So this is an example of a symbol which can have multiple interpretations. It's okay as long as we all agree on the right interpretation. So here, the Rishi is giving us symbolism, and Shankara is helping us understand that symbolism properly. So one reason for Makara being connected to Prajna, one reason is this idea of measuring. Vishwa and Taijasa entering Prajna, Vishwa and Taijasa emerging from Prajna. And the other reason, he says, is apiti, apitehe va. Apiti apyayaha. Apyayaha means dissolving, resolving, when something merges with something else. Like when sugar dissolves in water, that kind of merging, dissolving. He says, very clearly, eki bhavaha. It achieves a condition of oneness. First you have your cup of tea and some sugar. Then the sugar goes in the tea, and the sugar is lost. They're no longer two things. You no longer have tea plus sugar. You have now sweet tea. Eki bhava. They've become one. And this is a metaphor. And where am I? And the metaphor is Omkara Uchadanehi. When you recite Om, Antye Akshare, at the end of the last sound or last syllable, Eki Bhutau Iva Akara Om Akara Ukarao. A and U, excuse me. Just like sugar gets lost in the tea, in the same way and u get lost in the Makara. This is what Shankara is explaining. And that represents how your, like Vishva and Taijasa, or let me use other terms, your waking state experiences and dream state experiences get lost during deep sleep. Or we could say that Vishva and Taijasa get lost, they resolve into prajna, into that atma in a deep sleep state condition. This idea of merging. So the two, he gave two things, that idea of measuring, that and u go into makara and come out, just like Vishva and Taijasa go into prajna and come out. Literally come out when we wake up. What's happening? We wake up from deep sleep. We either wake up into a dream or we wake up all the way into the waking state. So very, very clearly, measuring doesn't sound very good to us, but certainly we get the idea of entering and coming out of deep sleep. That's the first of the two analogies. And the second of the two analogies is that of merging. So and u merge into makara. They get lost in makara. In the same way, all of our waking experiences and dream experiences merge into makara. Merge into makara and emerge from makara. Now we're going to see one more metaphor here. We'll do that now, and then we'll see the stuti here. This idea of and u merging into makara and emerging from makara sounds a little bit like the in terms of your experience, your waking and dream experiences merging into sleep and emerging from sleep. That's from the standpoint of the individual. Let's get some of his language back on the board. Remember, we said there was an individual perspective and a total perspective. Or we could say the microcosm and macrocosm is the translations that we've often used for this. So from the standpoint of Vyashti, the individual, we can say that Vishva and Taijasa merge into prajna. Not only do they merge, they emerge or re-emerge from prajna. So that's at the Vyashti standpoint, at the individual standpoint. Suppose we open up our field of view a little bit, take a bigger perspective. So from a bigger perspective, Vishva, the waking state, represents sthula jagat, the entire physical universe. Taijasa represents the sukshma jagat, the subtle universe. And at pralaya, at the time of the dissolution of the universe, these merge into what? We have to be very careful with our choice of language here. They return to Ishvara. And they then later emerge from Ishvara. Now, there's a mistake we could make here very easily and destroy the validity of these Advaita Vedantic teachings. If we were to imagine that at the end of time, the physical and subtle universes returned to Brahman, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. We say everything is Brahman, everything is a manifestation of Brahman. We say that. Everything is a manifestation of Brahman. We say that. But if you're a careful observer of Vedantic language, you've never heard it said that the universe resolves into Brahman. Or if you've heard it, it's been incorrectly said. The universe resolves not into Brahman, into Ishvara. Why? Ishvara is the cause for the universe. There is a connection between Ishvara and the universe. They're as real as each other. Brahman is more real than the universe. Brahman is more real than Ishvara. It's a different level of reality, like pot and clay. How about, let's see, what can be our... Well, pot and clay, if we're going to use that, we have to use it very carefully. Instead of pot and clay, I can't make that work, so I'm going to use a different... Lumber. Lumber means wood in different forms. So you can have a bunch of lumber, which means pieces of wood. You have 2x4s, you have plywood sheets, and you have all of this stuff. I don't know if you've ever built anything. So you have all these pieces of lumber. You can take these pieces of lumber and build a chair. Then you can take apart the chair and you can build a table. You can take apart the table and build a desk. So these pieces of lumber can be taken apart and put together in different ways. When you have a pile of lumber, you have the cause for the table, the chair, or the desk. You with me? You have a pile of lumber, which is a cause for the table or the chair. The pile of lumber is a causal condition. The causal condition is Ishvara. So the cause for the universe is Ishvara, and then that causal condition can become manifest as the physical universe and the subtle universe. But notice that the chair is made of wood, the desk is made of wood, and the pile of lumber is made of wood. You with me? You get the two levels now? So watch this. So watch what happens if we mix up the levels. How about this? I take apart the table and chair, and I end up not with a pile of lumber. I end up with just pure wood. Isn't that a confusion? Aren't I mixing two levels if I say that? So if you take apart the table and chair, you end up with lumber, which happens to be wood, but the table happened to be wood, the chair happened to be wood, and a pile of lumber happens to be wood, but you need to stay at the same level. This is the Advaita Vedanta of Sri Shankaracharya. He said, you make sure you stay on one level at a time. If you're talking about the world, talk about the world. If you're talking about Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, you talk about Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Don't mix up the two levels. The absolute level he called Paramarthika Satta. The relative level he called Vyavaharika Satta. You don't have to worry about the language, but this is how he treated it. So, look at the metaphor now. So just as the physical and subtle worlds resolve into Ishvara and emerge from Ishvara, in the same way, Vishwa and Taijasa, Atma and the waking and dream states, resolve not into consciousness, not into Sachidananda. They resolve into Prajna. Otherwise, we're mixing up levels. So look at the consequence if we made that mistake. If we say that Vishwa and Taijasa resolve into pure consciousness. Problem here is pure consciousness cannot be the cause for anything that has form. Pure consciousness is just pure consciousness. It can't cause anything. It can't do anything. It can't become manifest. There's no causal agency there. But pure consciousness with a causal agency can give rise to this. Oh, we'll take this metaphor a step further. Pure consciousness plus a causal agency, Ishvara, which is Brahman, plus a causal agency, We went through this long ago. Do you remember what that causal agency was? So these do not resolve into Brahman. They resolve into Brahman with a causal agency. Brahman with a causal agency is what we understand as Ishvara. In the same way, in your experience, when you sleep, Vishwa and Tejasa don't merge into pure consciousness, but rather into consciousness with a causal agency. But for you, the individual, your causal agency is avidya. Remember, we said it has that vikshepa shakti, that creative capacity. So notice these analogies between the vyashti and the samashti. So for the vyashti, for the individual, atma, for the samashti, Brahman, the causal factor for the individual being avidya, the causal factor for the samashti being maya. So that gives you a nice parallel, comparison of vyashti and samashti. Okay. Let us finish this verse. So we're done now with the analogies. So makara is connected to the prajna, atman awaking in the sleep state, because of mitehi, because of pervasion, because of aptihi, apiti, because of getting resolved. We went through all of that. And it ends with some stuti, and a stuti here. Minoti havai idam sarvam. There's our M word. Again, M is the makara, is the letter here. So minoti havai idam sarvam. Apitischa bhavati ya evam veda. Yaha evam veda. Yaha, one who evam, thus, veda, understands. One who understands the symbolism of makara being connected to prajna. What does that person get? Minoti, that person measures idam sarvam havai, indeed. That person, minoti, measures sarvam, everything. You can measure the universe. To measure something, you have to be bigger bigger than it, right? Your measuring tape has to be bigger than the object you're measuring. If what you're measuring is 4 feet tall, 4 feet long, and you only have a yardstick, it doesn't reach. So the measurer has to be bigger than the measured. So here, minoti havai sarvam. He measures everything, suggesting he is bigger or vaster than everything as a result of understanding this symbolism. Apitihicha, and that person, apiti, we said was resolve. Apitihicha bhavati, and that person gets absorbed. That person gets absorbed in everything. That person, we could loosely say that person enters samadhi, that person gains absorption, that person gains enlightenment. Careful now. This is still stuti. This is not saying that the result of this omkara upasana is you enter into a state of absorption. We're still saying stuti. In fact, Shankara even makes a point of saying, avantara palavachanam. This is a statement of secondary benefit, avantara palam, pradhana sadhana stutyartam. This statement is primarily for the sake, stuti artam, for the sake of praising sadhana, for the sake of praising this practice, for the sake of praising this meditation. Which points out something. We have to be very careful in interpreting scripture then. These statements of stuti, if you didn't understand the poetic style of stuti, you would take it very literally. And if you took it literally, you'd say that person, you're going, by understanding the connection between makara and prajna, you become vaster than the universe. Somebody reads that and takes it literally. Is that very helpful? And that's what happens if the scripture isn't understood properly, which is the reason we admit that we cannot learn these scriptures independently. Even if you know Sanskrit, you need a teacher. Of course, if you know enough Sanskrit, Sri Shankara can be your teacher. Or you can study with a teacher who knows the Sanskrit and who can understand properly. But clearly, if we study on our own without proper guidance, we can make some really big blunders. Okay, we've finished the preparation for the Omkara Upasana. We've learned the symbolism of Ahu and Ma, which leads us to the very last verse of the Upanishad. This has got to be the shortest Upanishad, being only 12 verses long. So when we meet next time, we will see the last verse. We'll learn Omkara Upasana, and I think we'll be able to practice it together. And I'll just mention in passing here that after this, then we'll take one more short Upanishad, and a very different one. The Upanishad I've chosen is, and I'll give a proper introduction, but just so you know in advance, it's called Amrita Bindu Upanishad. It's not a very common one, but it's one I think we'll enjoy studying quite a bit. It's not available on our website yet, but it will be in advance of our study. We'll conclude with our prayers.